I want you to imagine this. You've got a brother and he's out and about doing his daily work. He's working as a bread man in County Tyrone and he's shot dead. Now, a number of years later, the person who killed him has a very high profile because of other killings that he's carried out. And you actually have the courage at some point during your life, during a documentary, to go face to face with that killer. And your life goes on. And then out of the blue, you hear that the killer who is in prison has been released, albeit temporarily released, but you haven't been informed. How would that make you feel? I want to speak to Geraldine Hanna, who's the CEO of Victim Support Unit in Northern Ireland. Geraldine, good morning.
Good morning.
Geraldine, we're obviously talking about Michael Stone here, one of the most prolific killers that Northern Ireland has ever had. And people are waking up this morning to hear that he was allowed out on a temporary release to sell some art, to open an art exhibition and sell some of his own art. And the system didn't allow for the informing of a gentleman who had lost his brother, because the brother of that murdered man has said indeed that he should have been informed. And I would imagine other people would feel the same way. Michael Stone was convicted of murdering Roddy Hackett's brother Dermot in 1987. He was that bread man I was talking about. He also in cold blood killed other people going about their daily work, and he attacked Milltown Cemetery as well. Why would victims not be informed if a killer like that was being released to sell art at an art exhibition?
In Northern Ireland, Frank, there's actually three victim information schemes that exist, and one of which would apply in this situation, which is called the Prisoner Release Victim Information Scheme. Now, that scheme entitles victims or bereaved relatives for the opportunity to provide and receive information about prisoners whenever they're largely coming up to release or temporary release. Unfortunately, that scheme, however, is an opt-in scheme, so it requires victims or family members to have registered in order to receive information. So if the individual isn't registered, they won't be aware. Now, like with all opt-in schemes, it firstly relies on the individual to be aware of it to begin with, but secondly, it also requires the individual to be at the right time and place in their journey to kind of make an informed decision in relation to that. And quite often people may be told and either say no at the time or forget that they've been told. And what, you know, I would say to anybody listening today is that you can register for these schemes at any stage. So if anyone out there is impacted by this story this morning, they can get further information about how these schemes work on the Victim's Journey section of our website or on NI Direct or either by calling ourselves or the Victim Information Unit who runs these schemes.
So if Mr. Hackett had signed up to it, he would have been informed?
Yes, he would have. Now, these schemes, this one in particular, I think began around the year 2000s, in the early 2000s. It was brought in the Justice Act 2002. So there, previous to that, I'm not sure what, if any, scheme was in existence. So it may have been that those individuals were never informed. But there is, if anybody, you can sign up at any stage, so people can be informed now. And people who maybe have said no at a certain stage can still change their mind and come back and ask to be informed. Also, a family member or close friend can act as a representative. Ourselves at Victim Support can act as a representative and receive the information on behalf of the victim or bereaved family member in order to help facilitate that process if they desire.
Is it worse for victims if they hear secondhand and if they hear secondhand that this mass killer is out selling art? There's just something about the fact of him selling art. I'm trying to visualise myself in a position if I was the brother of one of the victims or it was a relative of mine who he had killed and he's out at an art exhibition and he's showing off his talents and his abilities and people are paying money to buy what he has painted. Does that not make it more difficult for the victims, for those families that he left in anguish?
Well, the whole period around an offender release, even if it's temporary release as they approach the end of their sentence, is a very difficult time for victims. It will bring back memories of the crime itself and also of the trial process. Obviously, preparation and support for at around that time is essential. So if someone is aware that that someone is being released, albeit temporarily, at least it reduces the chance of shock if they run into or someone informs them that the offender is out in the community.
And how do you cope with the victim then if they've gone through the trauma of seeing this person in an art exhibition or meeting him on the street or, you know, interacting with him in a shop? Can they turn to you? Can they come to you? Can they say, I just can't cope. I've looked in the eyes of this individual.
Yes, we will always be here if anyone does want to contact us in such circumstances. Really, what we will do is listen to the victim, try and understand and empathise where they're coming from. Sometimes it just helps for an individual to have that discussion with someone independent, because obviously in these sort of circumstances, the whole family is affected and people may not always want to disclose the extent of their feelings to their family members who are also hurting at this time. So it can help to speak to somebody independent from that. If we're the representatives in the case, we can also help victims to put forward their views to these schemes if they're registered, and in order for those views to be heard by the relevant scheme body who is overseeing the release of the offender.
Michael Stone, of course, is not the only killer out in society. We're peppered with people like that here, and sometimes we do forget. It's only on a morning like this morning when we're talking about him and the horrific actions that he took against people down through the years. We get a feeling for other victims who had their loved ones taken away by A, B or C, who happen to be out and doing whatever they do in society, many of them in high profile positions.
Yes, and of course that is really difficult, and it happens on a daily basis. Obviously, those high-profile offenders will maybe come to the media attention more often, but on a daily basis you have people who have lost loved ones or have suffered severe harm at the hands of an offender, and they have to deal with that impact when someone is released, when their sentence is served and is reintegrating back into the community. And that can cause obvious distress and harm. And organisations like ourselves are there to help as much as possible with that.
I'm just wondering which is the most difficult. Is it having a high profile person who you see in the papers, who you are aware of on television, who may be in a political party or in a position of power, and you know that that person was involved in the killing of your loved one? Is it easier to cope with that than to be walking down the street and see some guy come out of the bookies and say, gee, that's the bloke that killed my dad? Which one is the easier to actually interact with?
Yeah, I suppose it's going to be difficult to sort of put them in a priority. You know, different individuals will be affected differently. But the latter case, what you've described, if someone isn't aware that the person is out there, then that shock factor is there. Of course, it will cause obvious distress for individuals whenever someone has been released, and even if they do know about it. But that harm can be minimised if they are made aware. If you have that shock factor as well, that can catch you unawares, and that can cause further harm. So we would encourage as many people as possible who wish to do so to sign up for these schemes.
Okay.
To try and prevent that.
Charlene, very informative. Thanks for coming on. Thank you.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Geraldine Hannah, the CEO of the Victim Support. And I want to speak to Jim McDowell, a journalist who's written many times about Michael Stone. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Jim, should we be surprised all these years later that people are shocked when they become aware that Michael Stone is not—he's not out yet, but he's in the near future. He will be out, and he'll be running something of an art empire. He'll be selling his popular paintings, and he'll be making a handsome profit on it.
Well, I don't. This isn't the first time, Frank. I mean, whenever Michael Stone died under the Good Friday Agreement, Yeah, he had an art exhibition then of his paintings in jail. And, you know, Michael Stone, he used to use the kind of, an artist would sign his paintings. Well, Michael Stone signed the back of his paintings. But in jail, he got one of those fingerprint outfits. You know the wee ink things that police use to take your fingerprints? It's probably electronic, but it's a long time since I've been. Had my collar felt and had fingerprints taken, Frank, and please don't laugh at that. But the but he had one of those, and he actually put his thumbprint on the back of his paintings to authenticate them. And then whenever he got out, he had this big exhibition over in a gallery on the Newdenards Road. I think it's since moved, Frank. But you know, there wasn't an outcry then. I suppose now it's because the brother of Mr. Haggard wasn't informed that he was getting out, that this is kicked off again. But, I mean, Michael Stone, he's had studios. I remember going to interview him in a studio. I think it was Tully Carnet or Ballybeam when I was greeted by a mob of UDA growlers. But Stone had insisted that he wanted to talk to me. And I went in, and the gallery was absolutely stock full the whole way around the walls. And there he was in the studio painting away. And don't forget either, Frank, that he tried to get off the botched storming of Stormont when he got stuck in the revolving doors. He tried to argue that was his attempt at performance art. So really, he's been at this for a long time. This is nothing new. You were talking there about the shock factor of seeing somebody coming out of the bookies or people being told that someone had killed their parents, brother, or sister, whatever, committed an atrocity, whether one thing was worse than the other. I think at this time, actually, Frank, is preempting the latest release of Michael Stone. I mean, it would be the second time he's been allowed out of jail. And I remember the first press conference after he was let out of jail. The Jim Gray was still alive, the so-called Brigadier of Bling, and he was on the door of a premises over in East Belfast. And that was a day where I asked Stone directly at the press conference. There was a lot of argy-bargy about whether I was going to be allowed in to represent the Sunday World. But whenever I got in, I think it was the final question, I said to Stone, is your war over? And he said, my war is over. Might be paraphrasing them there, but that was it, the gist of the thing. But then again, he got out, and then Stormont come up. So I think you know, this kind of release is kind of a preview, a preempting his eventual release. Even though you know, he all of those over 600 years in jail was piled on top of what he got for Stormont, Frank. So I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody. You said there. I mean, you used the word peppered. Our streets are peppered with people who have committed the most vile atrocities. And Frank, look, there's got to be some kind of balance made here. Look, if you look at the number of people who were were convicted terrorists, Frank, Stone may be trying to make a few shillings, a few bob out of his paintings. But if you look at the number of former terrorists, convicted terrorists, bombers, gunmen or whatever, who are now being paid out of the public purse to act as so-called community activists, you may say that's a different argument. But Frank, I mean, if you're looking at the two extremes, one, Stone trying to sell his paintings, and two, all of these boys being paid up to £38,000, £40,000 a year with no qualifications, no police vetting to say that they can work with children in the communities where children, there may be problem children or whatever, and you look at that and set that against Stone, then it's a toss of a coin, isn't it?
Interesting commentary. Jim McDowell, thank you very much indeed for coming on. Journalist Jim McDowell, former Northern editor of the Sunday World. If you're just joining us, good morning to you. Here's a question for you, just a simple question. I'll have an honest answer from you, and maybe you can explain why you decide to give the answer. If you won a Michael Stone painting in a raffle, would you hang it on your wall? There's a question for you. If you won a Michael Stone painting in a raffle, would you hang it on a wall? To even go further, would you go and buy a Michael Stone painting? Or maybe you've already bought one and it is pride of place in your home. Do let us know. Is it an investment or are you honouring a terrorist? 0289033105. Seem to be quite a few weddings on today. I hope the showers do stay away. They are beginning to threaten, but it's still bright and sunny here in Belfast. And I notice that Alan and Janet are having a big wedding today. It's not theirs, it's their daughter Alana's wedding. And Johnny is the main man. Alan is former postman. I know Alan, and indeed he's a Glentoran supporter, he's a Liverpool supporter. And Alan and Janet met many years ago in a Lansdowne Court House, hotel, disco, and I was there that very night. That is a while ago. Alan and Janet and their daughter Alana getting married today. Every good wish to Johnny as well. If you're just switching on, you are very welcome. Good morning to you. How is the form with you today? We're talking about the paintings of Michael Stone. I want to speak to Eddie, who I believe has one. Good morning, Eddie.
Hi, Frank. I've spoke to you before. I've got one in my back bedroom, and it's got his fingerprint on it and everything.
What does it depict? Describe the painting to me, Eddie.
It's a lady, and she's got long blonde hair, and she's got a black top on and red lipstick.
And
it's absolutely beautiful.
Yes. Yes, I believe he is a very talented painter, and I know in the past I've seen some of his paintings. And I can't clearly remember what they look like, but I must just look them up again to refresh my memory. I don't feel very drawn to the paintings of someone who's a mass killer. Why did you buy one, or how did you come to own one, Eddie?
Because I just loved it the minute I seen it. And on the back, it's got his fingerprint and everything to prove it's his.
Yes, but did you buy it because you thought it was an excellent painting, or did you buy it because Michael Stone painted it?
I bought it because Michael Stone painted it, because Michael Stone happens to be one of my pals.
So he's a friend of yours?
Yes.
You don't see any bad in the man at all?
Nope. Because, Frank, I was speaking to you a few months ago, and do you remember my wife told you the three Scottish soldiers?
Yes, well, Eddie, there have been many tragedies down the years here in Northern Ireland. I'm more than happy for you to remind us of that story. Go ahead.
But the three Scottish soldiers, the one in the middle was my wee brother. And that was terrible. Don't get me wrong, it's the same in both states, Frank. They've got troublemakers over there, and we've got troublemakers over here.
So, because your brother was one of the three Scottish soldiers who were killed, and their memorial is often desecrated where it is in North Belfast, because you lost your brother, you supported the actions of Michael Stone when he killed innocent people?
No, I don't. I don't support that when he killed innocent people. I would rather he killed the people that killed my brother.
And because he armed himself and he went to Milltown Cemetery, and because he argues that he was targeting IRA people in Milltown Cemetery, you honour him by calling him a friend and buying one of his paintings?
I actually bought him a drink in Avenue 1. That used to be in East Belfast. I bought him a drink.
Knowing he was a killer?
Yep.
Interesting commentary. Eddie, I do appreciate you coming on, because, you know, that has revenge written all over it. And that's how people feel, that they will support a killer because they sense that that person is taking revenge on your behalf. It's a sad, sad reflection of our society, but it is real. It's absolutely real. We did ask for a reason why you would buy a Michael Stone painting and hang it on a wall, and that's a clear reason. Very sad reason, I have to add, but a clear reason from Eddie. Eddie, I do appreciate you coming on. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other reasons as to why you may have a Michael Stone painting, or anything else from the darkness of our recent past that depicts you in some way honouring a person who visited hurt upon others. Do we have other examples of it? Many things were made in prison. Many items, mantelpieces, pieces of furniture, tables, crosses. Do you know who made them? Were they made by people who killed other people? And do they sit with pride of place in your home? You can let us know, 02890 333 105. And do you feel that they are suitable items within your home? Do they add to the general feel of a welcoming place where you reside? 02890 333 105, 077 66 105 105. Just looking at some of the texts here. People are like amateur, I presume amateur art analysts. There's three texts there, almost one after the other, just describing the paintings of Michael Stone and highlighting how good an artist he is. As I say, I have seen some of his work before. I never, to be honest, felt drawn to study the artwork of any mass killer, whether it's Michael Stone or anybody else. But I'll have a look. Let me speak to Alex, who's on this line. I've been looking at the paintings. I'm no art judge, so I'll not pass any comment whatsoever. Quite a variation in his styles, that's all I'll say. Alex, go ahead.
No, I just was a bit surprised when I heard on the news about him being released for the day to go to an art gallery to show his paintings. Personally, I think it's totally wrong. If he's doing time, he should be doing his time, because the people he murdered aren't getting time out to go to art galleries or family christenings or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think when they get their time to do their time, you know, it's a bit of a mockery of the judicial system.
Having said that, Alex, that this is the process. People do get out on day release. They do get out for short-term reintegration. He's no different than any other criminal. But he will make money as a result of his artistic skills. 66% of every sale goes into his pocket. 33% goes to charity. Would you buy one of his paintings?
Bloody sure I wouldn't.
Even if it was to grow in value and become something of a collector's item?
No, I definitely wouldn't. It wouldn't be of any value to me. If he's going to be able to sell them, I think 100% should go to charity.
Okay, as I say, it isn't 100% to charity. He is running a business. And, of course, he's not the first person to come out of jail and to go on to be a successful business operator.
Frank asked people, would they buy a Gerry Adams cookbook? I said, does Gerry Adams have a cookbook? He's written many books, of course, and I'll ask the question, would you buy a Gerry Adams book? Is there a difference between something that you've written and has been published and it's now in the form of print, and something that is as personal as a painting? It's another relevant question. But Sam, good morning to you. This one says, good morning, Frank. I'm an artist. I've been for 30 years an artist. I went through art college and qualified at the University of Ulster, did my degree, then promoted my work, and thank God I made a good living from selling my work. Michael Stone did not go through the educational system. He gets free publicity and describes himself as an artist. He is a murderer who paints. That's all. And I've met him, and he is a dark character, and his work is amateurish and lacks imagination. It hasn't developed in the years he has been painting. I'm sorry, but he is a hobbyist. I'm enjoying your show, says a man called Michael, who is an artist. Is that a fair analysis from Michael, or is that sort of a bitter interpretation of the progress of Michael Stone? Does he make a relevant point there when he says, you know, he put himself through art college, he learned the skills, he is a successful artist, and he compares himself to Michael Stone, who didn't go through any educational system for art, gets free publicity. And my goodness, you're getting plenty of that this morning. Someone else is saying, Frank, Michael Stone will be rubbing his hands with glee at the amount of people who are talking about his art this morning. And you say, he describes himself as an artist, but he's simply a murderer who paints. And you've met him, you feel he's a dark character, and you describe his work as amateurish and unimaginative. So, you know, is that Is that a better artist speaking, or is that an absolute on-the-nail analysis of Michael Stone? The other Michael, thank you very much for getting in touch with us. 02890-333-105, 077-66-105-105. There's another one saying, Michael Stone will be thanking you, 105, for the free publicity. He'll be lapping it up, says Chris in Lurgan. Michael Stone's actions that day in Milltown Cemetery caused the deaths of the two corporals who were murdered some days after it, says this texter. Someone else is saying to Eddie, please remind the sad Scottish man Eddie that as a direct result of Michael Stone's attack, two more British soldiers lost their lives. Would he buy him a pint for that? Eddie was the Scotsman who bought Michael Stone a pint, basically thanking him for the actions that he had taken. Eddie had lost his brother, a Scottish soldier. He had lost his brother, one of three Scottish soldiers who were killed in the Troubles here in Northern Ireland. They were all killed at the same time. If you're just switching on the radio, good morning, 90-333-105. Michael Stone, of course, didn't kill the two corporals in Andersonstown. We should emphasise that. They may have died as the domino effect of what happened in Milltown Cemetery, but those who killed the two corporals have to take responsibility for those executions. 90-333-105. George has a point that he wants to make. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Frank. How are you this fine day?
George, I'm fine. I'm happy enough here. I feel for those people who are victims this morning, not only of Michael Stone, but victims in general, because we're being reminded of how difficult it is for people who might bump into the person who killed their loved one. And it could be from any shade of society or walk of life. Being a victim is not an easy thing, and we're being reminded of victimhood this morning. So even on a bright, sunny, blissful August day, there sometimes is an ongoing reminder. There is an ongoing reminder of hatred in the air. However, what was your point, George?
Absolutely, Frank. I agree entirely with what you have just said, but I think it's a very emotive subject that has been raised. As far as Michael Stone would be concerned, he has found his niche in the art world, per se. But likewise, I felt that I needed to remind you that on the Republican side, they did make a lot of Celtic drums, burns, and filled them with all sorts of provocative writings, and two rights don't make a wrong. My own opinion is that if he wants to do his art and he wants to make money from it, well then I agree with the lady that said 100% of it should go back to his back to charity. Jim McDowell said it right when he said there needs to be a balance, and the balance is how do you on one hand hold up Stone and hold up the Republican side. I know it's not orange and green. Those that have committed murders should spend their full sentence behind prison bars, regardless of the Good Friday Agreement. To kill someone is totally, totally wrong. I just can't accept that he is making money from his paintings. I have seen his work, and I would agree that it is quite amateurish. But it's the sort of celebrity side to him. You know, he stood up and shot all those innocent people at Milltown Cemetery, and then tried to do his art shoot at Stormont. The guy is a dark, dark fella, and he should not be released.
Just on one point about Jim McDowell, and I know you didn't mean to say this, but Jim McDowell didn't say on the radio that people should stay in prison forever for crimes that they commit. Just in case that comes across for people who didn't hear the interview with Jim earlier on. I know you're complimenting Jim on what he actually did say, but with regards to the paintings, you've raised this, and I touched on this earlier about furniture that was made in prison or Celtic crosses pizzas that were made in prison. Would you happily display one of those in a cabinet in your own home if it was made by a killer? Now, if a Celtic cross is bought at an auction and it was made in Longkesh, you're not going to be certain who made it. It could be an innocent internee who made it. It could be a mass killer who created it. So you would have that question mark hanging over it. Or if you know, wooden mantelpieces were also made in Longkesh, and you know, some of them have Republican artwork on them. You could be asking, was that made by a team of people or an individual person? It certainly is different if it's made by a completely innocent person who's in there, who's been interned in the wrong, and that's what they've been doing while they've been in there. Well, then you would have no question mark over it. But if it was made by someone who shot two or three people, you know, and you're sitting at home watching television and you're glancing up at it and you're thinking, that was made by X, who is a killer, would you feel comfortable with that being in your home? Because that is a very personal item. And it's the same with Michael Stone's paintings. They are incredibly personal because he has, lovingly I would imagine, created them. He has used his skill and his abilities to create something that many people would think are beautiful works of art. I know some of you are criticising him, saying the art isn't great, but that's irrelevant. He created it. Is it so personal to Michael Stone that it blights your home? Or is it so personal to Michael Stone, as in Eddie's case who was on earlier, that it enhances your home? Would you feel comfortable with artwork from any killer if you knew it was done by a killer?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Frank, if I may say this, that art is in the eye of the beholder. For me, would I put a stone painting in my house? No. I have six children that I have been able to keep well out of the way of the troubles. And there is no way that I would entertain this sort of artwork coming into my house. As far as I'm concerned, all that it is doing is feeding the guy's celebrity. That's all he's doing. It's just feeding his celebrity. He's going from notorious to a celebrity. And I think that is entirely wrong. You have to think of the families that this man left without children, without husbands, without brothers. You have to take that into account. And for him to have this type of publicity, he's probably sitting back rubbing his hands now. I'm on the Frank Mitchell Show, everybody's talking about me. It's crazy.
However, he is entitled, as other criminals are, to come from the tariff that they've served and to make a success of their lives. That's what the justice system allows in Northern Ireland. That's not what it allows, it's what it encourages. It's called rehabilitation.
Absolutely. He is allowed to come out and make his living after his time served. That is just, as you've rightly said, that is the justice system. But against that, one has to think that has the justice system been doing the right thing in letting this guy out after such a short time committing the crimes which he did do? I mean, everybody talks about the Good Friday being the Good Friday Agreement being a good thing for the country and so on and so forth. Yes, generally speaking, it is. Except as far as the justice system goes. I mean, if I had someone close to me killed and I was to bump into someone 2 or 3 or 4 years later, I would be upset as well. And I don't think that the feelings of the victims or the victims' families is being properly considered here.
I'm just wondering, and I understand entirely what you're saying, George, and while you're speaking, I'm wondering about another scenario. Because of the personal nature of the artwork, this is the essential bit. This is what makes this different from other people coming out and getting a job in a factory, or people coming out and maybe being in politics, or people who could be coming out and driving a lorry. They're never going to be physically interacting with you. You're never going to be a passenger in their lorry, but you might cross their path while they're delivering something to a store. And that, if you were a victim, that would make you feel certainly uneasy at best. If, however, you're a member of the public and you see that guy driving the lorry delivering something to the store, do you say to yourself, I'm never going to shop in that store again because they're taking deliveries from a former killer? Or do you see rehabilitation? Do you see a fella who's got his life back on track? He's served his time and he's now earning an honest, decent living by contributing to society. I don't know. I don't know how I'd react if I saw an individual in either of those circumstances. And, you know, I'm lucky enough not to have been a victim, so I wouldn't be able to interpret anything for a victim. However, let's move it away from Michael Stone for a minute, because we're talking about the personal issue of artwork. And if, for example, one of the female killers at Hydebank, there are a number of high-profile female killers in Hydebank who are serving time for killing their husbands or being involved in murder. If they were to, and they will get out eventually, if they were to get out and one of them had learned the skill of hairdressing in Hydebank, and this is one of the skills they do learn, if you knew that a female killer was now out and working in a hairdressing salon, would you want her cutting your hair? Would you allow her to be as personal as that to you, George?
No, Frank, I'm a bit sick. I would not, if I knew that someone had committed a serious offence, as in murder or bombing, and they opened up premises next door to me, I would move. I would want absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with them.
Yeah, well, you're very clear. You're absolutely clear on it. But that doesn't tally with rehabilitation, because it's actively encouraged, and many people would argue it is the only way to go to rehabilitate people. But can some of it just be too personal, like buying their artwork or getting your hair cut by a killer? Good morning. What's on the text? Frank, if you were sent to interview Michael Stone, would you shake his hand? The answer is very simple. The answer is yes. The answer is yes, without hesitation. If I'm going to interview someone, I'm representing myself, I'm representing the company professionally, I will shake their hand. It doesn't mean I have respect for them. It means I'm acknowledging their company. I shake hands with everyone who I meet professionally. Absolutely no hesitation. Mary is on this line. Good morning, Mary.
Morning, Frank.
Mary, you've been through the experience of losing someone special.
Yes, Frank. You've had this conversation many a times, and I've always wanted to ring in, but you just didn't feel strong enough to do it. My father was murdered, and his murderer was allowed to leave prison on license after 8 years. Now, how that happens, I don't know, because he was a well-known loyalist, continued to murder, and still was always released on his license. Now, I'm entitled to know where he is at the minute. I have requested to find out where he is. Is he in prison at the minute? And this has only happened over the past year. Or is he free? They won't get me it. They won't tell me. But my father was murdered. Bothered with nobody, Frank. A man that brought up a big family. And we screamed that night when that car pulled to the house for him not to open the door. But he did. He didn't hear us. He heard us when it was too late. And us three ended up witnessing our father being murdered in front of us. Now I'm in counselling now, and this is how I feel, that I can't ring in, because I don't care who he is anymore. He is not going to take my life.
Mary, I really appreciate your phone call, and I also appreciate the fact that you haven't named the killer, and I wish that you do not name the killer. It's important for me because I don't have all the legal information in regards to the murder that you're talking about, but at some future time we could easily name him, but not on this particular occasion. Now, I will continue the conversation. I will continue the conversation with you, and I really appreciate you being so courageous as to lift the phone and to come on the program. The counselling is obviously helping you to a great extent.
But Frank, 39 years later, I'm only getting the proper counselling that can make me strong enough to say, I want a visit to meet this man. I'm meeting this man face to face. Now, if they tell me where he is, which they have to do, it's my right to find out where he is. I've explained it in a letter. This is what my plan is. If he's in prison, I would like to go to the prison. Could they ask him to give me permission to go to a visit to him? I want to look him face in the face and tell him I witnessed his face at the age of 13. But he's not taking my life on me anymore. I'm now 52 and I can only look this man directly in the face and say, tell him, you ruined my life, not my father's life, not my mother's life. You ruined his family of 16, our lives. You took a man that was so special. We had people from both sides of the community. We lived, Frank, on both sides of the community. And this is why I won't name the murderer. Because I wouldn't give him the publicity.
Mary, it's a courageous telephone call. There's no question or doubt about it. I have to be very careful for legal reasons, and I know that you're not going to name the person, but I just have to be so, so careful that even by accident, we don't reveal who that individual is. And I can't ask you questions about, are you sure he's still alive? I can't ask you questions, did he get out on the Good Friday Agreement and then break the law again? Because I just have to walk that thin line of legality we prevent ourselves from making a mistake live on air. But one thing for sure, Mary, that is coming across is that your voice as a victim is an exceptionally strong voice. And I'm really pleased that you did lift the phone, because it's a reminder to those who did visit hurt and hatred upon society that the victim can win in the end. The victim can be strong enough to be like you are, Mary. And I do hope you get your time to sit across the table and look him in the eye and tell him that regardless of what he did, you actually won in the end. Mary,
I wouldn't give him the glory by giving his name out. I wouldn't do it.
No, fair play to you. Fair play, Mary. If you do want to stay on the line, Mary, we'll try and take more information from you off air. If you want to stay on the line, we'll take more information off air. I want to speak to Bernadette, who's on this line. Good morning, Bernadette.
Hello, Frank.
Yes, Bernadette.
Right, Frank, I've been very, very disappointed in this programme this morning with this Frank Stone boy.
Yeah, Michael Stone.
Or Michael Stone, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Why are you disappointed?
Now, I'll tell you why. He calls himself an artist. He's not an artist. He's not an artist. He wasn't an artist when he was out doing all the murdering that he'd done. Right? He became a murderer when he went into jail.
Yeah, he became an artist when he went into jail.
Pardon?
You're saying he became an artist when he went into jail?
Yes. And the thing about it is, didn't he have the time to do all that? Because we're paying for him, right? To be in jail and to have all the amenities for him, what he needs, paints, brushes, etc., canvases, everything that comes with being an artist. Would I have one of his paintings? I go as far as to say, Frank, I wouldn't even touch the handle of the door where he is having his exhibition.
But Bernadette, the reality is that rehabilitation of offenders happens right across the country. And I've used other examples. There are women who are in prison for murder who are learning to be hairdressers who at some time in the future will work in a salon. There are men who are in prison for the most disgusting and despicable crimes who will be delivering groceries to your shop in the future. That's the way society is. That's actually actively encouraged. It's called rehabilitation. We can't lock people up forever. Is it because it's such a personal item? It's the art. It's an expression of Michael Stone, an expression of a person who, in one hand, is a terrorist, but on the other hand, is an artist. That annoys you.
He's not an artist. He's definitely not an artist.
But he has learned the skill. He's learned the skill in prison.
Pardon?
He has learned the skill. He may have had it before he went into prison, but he has learned the skill in prison, and he is selling pieces of art, and he is making money from it.
Let me tell you something, Frank. There's one thing. There's two things in this life that you can't learn. You can't learn to be a singer, nor can you learn to be an artist. You have to be born with that. I have a son who's an artist, and every time I look at his hands, right, I always think, right, the one thing that he was born with was blessed hands. There's a song that David Bowie sings, and the words are very, very strong. John Denver, right? In the artist's loving hand, right? Do you see people like Michael Stone, right? They're psychopaths. It wouldn't matter what you said to them about who they killed or whatever, right? It means nothing to them. The fact that somebody can take a gun or a knife and go out and put that into a human being, right? Rehabilitation. You talk to me about rehabilitation. Sorry.
It's the other side of the argument, isn't it? We're hearing it from both sides this morning. Bernadette, thank you for your analysis. And it all goes back to this personal feeling of art and expression of art and that human touch. And that was so well described by Bernadette, those loving hands, those creative hands, those hands of power that people have when they are blessed with artistic ability. And Michael Stone's hands, the same hands that shot dead six different people, he just didn't do Milltown. He killed workers on their way to work, at work, coming from work. Ordinary blokes who were out trying to earn a decent living. That's what he did. One of them he shot on a building site by going up and tapping the side of the car window while the young man was eating his sandwiches and shot him in the head. Those are the sort of killings that Michael Stone did with those creative hands that he's using to be an artist. And some people feel an excellent artist. Other people are critical of his artwork, but those are the same hands. So is it that personal touch of art that makes Michael Stone more of a conversation piece than other killers who are out and about in society? As we said to Jim McDowell earlier in the programme, the place is peppered with people who have killed people, and they're out and about going about their 9 to 5 at this present moment in time, and there's not a word about it. This is the Frank Mitchell phone-in. Good morning.